All right, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to Free Association. This is the Saturday radio show warm-up session, which means it's a rehearsal of sorts. It's a way of me getting my head together and working out the thoughts that I want to express this afternoon in the actual live radio show that goes out on Revolution Radio. So I've got some thoughts about eugenics and transhumanism. So the show's about transhumanism, but from a slightly satirical point of view. I wanted to keep it lightish. So I've got a couple of videos. One is from the Dark Horse podcast, and the other one is from Mr. TARDIS, talking about Cybermen. Cybermen obviously are human beings that have been put through a process which turns them into a robot, which you can't get any more transhumanist than that, really. And I want to find the Harold Wilson White Heat of Technology speech as well. So that's something I've got to find, though. I'll do that after the Dark Horse podcast section. So I was listening to The Perfect Triangle last night, which is a show on Revolution Radio, and they were interviewing Judy Mikowicz, who's a whistleblower who used to work on HIV research and various forms of research into cancers and AIDS and that sort of thing in the 90s, I think. It's a little while ago. She's retired now. But she's very vocal in her criticism of Anthony Fauci and Robert Gallo and the people around those two in particular, who are the people running the NIH and the research programs at the time. So the upshot of listening to this interview, it was a very, very good interview. It's the best that I've heard Judy Mikowicz speaking about anything. It was very, very clear that she knows exactly what she's doing. Very clear. So I trust her now. I was a little bit cautious, but now I trust what she's saying. And the implication of that is that I'm more inclined to say that there's something very serious going on in terms of some kind of eugenics program, but it may not be conscious. What I realized last night is that it's the environment creates the next part of the process. So the environment that Judy was working in was a criminal conspiracy within the scientific biological research community. So if you put that together with an environment within the vaccine, pharmaceutical vaccine research, where they're not liable for damage, then you've got the perfect combination of things that produces eugenics, because the vaccine companies are going to go to market knowing that they're not liable for any consequences. And according to Judy Mikowicz, the cell cultures that they're building the virus cultures in are contaminated. So the vaccines are contaminated with monkey viruses, monkey kidney viruses, and cow viruses, and various other animal viruses that potentially can cause cancers. So there's a eugenics process in motion right there, but it's not necessarily conscious. It's a consequence of the environment. So the people that created this environment are the vaccine companies, and the heads of research at the NIH and the CDC. And the FDA, presumably. All of those people are involved in creating the environment. So there may or may not be a conscious creative process going on. It might be a subconscious creative process, or Bill Gates probably as well is involved in that, but maybe later on. So I can say for sure that there's a eugenics process going on, but I don't know whether it's conscious or subconscious. It's an emergent property of the environment, but there may be some conscious thought going into it. And given the amount of circumstantial evidence around Bill Gates' family that associates them with Planned Parenthood and birth control, it could be that he's internalized that in his subconscious. And he brings that to the table when he comes to the table. I don't know. That's what I'm thinking is probably going on. So consciously, he might be doing everything for the highest good of the highest number or whatever. It's a utilitarian principle at work. But subconsciously, there's a eugenics program at work. And it's the eugenics program that manifests within the environment. So anyway, that being said, that's what I think. That's what I'm prepared to say publicly about what's going on. So I'm still not committed to saying it's a conscious process, but it is. There is something going on, undoubtedly. When vaccines are contaminated and they're still being rolled out, that's a problem. And when people are being injured and nothing's being done about it, when research is being faked, that's a problem. So it's getting more likely to me that it's a conscious process, but I don't want to say that it is yet. I want to have enough evidence to say conclusively that it's a conscious process, and I want to know my reasoning for getting how I got there so that I can take other people through the process of the reasoning. I don't want to just jump this time. Usually I'm happy to jump through an intuitive process. This time I want to go through the steps, and I want to do it very carefully because it's a tricky thing to talk to people about, and I want to be able to take people through the steps. Anyway, so I've got the Dark Horse podcast lined up from a couple of weeks ago, I think this is, and it's Brett and Heather talking about transhumanism and the impact of technology on human beings and human consciousness. So it's about 7 minutes.
I like your idea of fourth frontier. Others think that the next frontier is body-mind tech merge. IOB. What's IOB stand for, Zach? Okay. And then there's a link to something.
Internet of Brains.
Maybe. There's a URL, siliconicarus.org, transhumanism, thoughts. We've been hearing more and more of this. I think Joe Rogan brought it up.
Yep.
I think Brian King brought it up. A number of people feel like this is where we're going. They don't want us to be going there, but it's inevitable.
Well, okay. First off, we got to relax.
Do we?
Yeah.
Really?
A little.
This doesn't sound like you.
We got to relax, get our head in the game, and then leave nothing on the table. Leave it all on the field. I don't know. No, we don't need to relax. But we need to relax about the idea of the tech merge because it's too late. It's already happened.
Okay. So, yeah.
The thing is, you have already merged, but because the interface isn't wires, for example, it is somewhat invisible to us. Now that said,
but I mean, I found myself doing this today, just like out in nature, and just like I'm just gonna look.
Right. Oh, yeah, they got you.
Terrible. Awful.
Yeah,
it's completely awful.
Absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I think the point is, look, it's happened. We can see that the consequences are not entirely horrible, but a lot of them are really catastrophic. It's disrupting
all
sorts
of
normalcy.
And some of them will be irreversible.
Right. Well, you know, hence what we do argue in the book, which is that you ought
to... Put your phone down. Really, put it down.
Well, put your phone down, but, you know, look, if you're going to make a transition about which you know very little about the consequences, then you better be prepared to unmake that transition. And the way we adopted the smartphone, you know, what seems like forever ago but wasn't, I mean, it really wasn't.
It really wasn't. Yeah.
The point is, oh, you completely changed how the species works. Yeah. And not all to the good. In fact, it may be that the species is incapable now of navigating because we are so easily divided from each other over things that should absolutely be galvanizing us, right? So if that's true, if a technology can sweep to fixation, it's not quite fixation. Glenn Beck does not have a phone, but everybody else does.
Well, no, everybody else, almost everybody else with the means, which means, you know, some people in the non-weird world have it, but many people don't, and some number of people in the weird world just don't have the means for it either.
Well, I'm being glib, of course, but my sense is that yes, there are people who don't have a smartphone in the U.S. Very few. Right. Is my impression.
Yep.
Right. I'm not saying it's universal in the homeless population, but I don't know how. I mean, maybe they're burner phones, or I mean, they're prepaid or whatever. But
is that a thing in smartphone land? I don't know. But yes, you and I have.
Yes, it is.
Zach says yes, burner prepaid smartphones. But yes, even among the homeless, who have almost nothing, there are people with smartphones.
Right. So anyway, and you know, also as you and I have encountered. Lots of people haven't. In fact, there are lots of places in the world where the landline network never got up and running, and so
right,
cell phones.
But you know, and then so this is a little different, though. And we haven't been back, for instance, to Madagascar since the late 90s.
Yeah.
And by the mid 90s in Madagascar, we didn't have cell phones until 2003, 2004, or something like that. Cell phones, even we didn't. Mm-hmm. We personally didn't. All of our colleagues did, but we were like, nah, not sure. Basically, at the point that I was late stage pregnancy with Zach, it's like, okay. We gotta get phones. But mid-late 90s, when increasingly people were getting cell phones, but by no means was it universal in the U.S., say. In Madagascar, many people had cell phones.
Yep.
But smartphones didn't exist, and they were cheap flip phones, and I have no idea, not having been back to Madagascar since 99, what the distribution of flip phones versus smartphones looks like. What we were seeing was, because it is such an impoverished country with so little ability to put in infrastructure, landlines just never went in.
Yeah.
So there are a couple places, you know, I imagine Tana has some landlines and such, and you know, some of the bigger cities, but throughout most of the country there's no capacity.
Well, the cell phone was just superior because you could actually call from places and reach people. And other things that you might want to do.
Oh my God!
With the phone.
Trying to make a landline call to our parents at some point, like 93 or something, and I don't know. It took 3 hours, and we still were able to be like, "We're alive!" Bye.
Right. We still don't know whether they thought that was a good or a bad thing.
The parents on the other end.
The parents. They probably thought it was a good thing
that we were alive.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah, I don't remember the nature of the question, but oh, I know that. Yeah, the Borg. And whether or not
transhumanism, yeah.
Yeah, resistance.
IOB, did you figure out what IOB means? So it's on what? It's on pitch.
No, it's going to be Internet of something.
I don't think so. I think it would have been a little O then.
It would have been a little O.
It's not
a little
yet.
O.
No.
Mm.
So that's all
the
prediction
I did. Okay. It's on bitch.
It's on bitch.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
So, we do these things. It's increasingly catastrophic. We need to stop doing these things. And not doing these things means reversibility.
Yeah, reversibility.
Okay. That's the Dark Horse podcast from It's number 98, the Q&A session for number 98, which is 2 weeks ago now. They're up to number 100 next week with a gap for whatever reason this week. But so that's a good piece, and I want to find the White Heat of Technology. Let's do that now. And it's such an excuse to play the Velvet Underground, White Light, White Heat. But I probably won't. This is Al Wilson on the White Heat of Technology. My friend, you know.
Of some evolution. But that revolution cannot become a reality unless we are prepared to make far-reaching changes in economic and social attitudes which permeate our whole system of society. The Britain that is going to be forged in the white heat of this revolution will be no place for restrictive practices or for outdated methods on either side of industry.
Afford speculators taking large sums out of the large cuts of the national cake, which they've done nothing to produce before. It's shared out among the people who did. I would like to see consideration given, and we shall give consideration to it, to what the Americans do. A windfall profits tax on bank profits when, through no fault or virtue of their own, they are just coining money.
From now on, the pound abroad is worth 14% or so less in terms of other currencies.
That's a mean horse in the pound here in Britain. In your pocket, or purse, or in your bank, has been devalued.
Become a reality unless we are prepared to make far-reaching changes. In economic and social attitudes. In the white heat of this revolution. Economic and social attitudes. In the white heat of this revolution. In economic and social attitudes. The Britain that is going to be born. In the white heat of this revolution. Cannot become a reality. Cannot become a reality. Cannot become a reality. Cannot become a reality. Cannot become a reality.
Who do the advertisements, Mr. Wilson, make up pipe smokers to be more virile, more exciting, more fascinating men than anybody else? Do you have that thought ever remotely, perhaps way back in your mind?
No. No.
Promise?
Quite sure about it.
Harold Wilson, of course, is a very interesting guy. So that takes me to 22 minutes. And that's my intros and two videos. So that's probably about right. Half an hour of Doctor Who after that. Will take me to the end of the show, so I think I'm going to use that clip of Harold Wilson just because I want to keep this lightish, and those three combination of those three things is enough to make the point that I want to make and have a bit of fun with it. So that's probably enough for the warm-up show. That tells me what I need to know.